we're a much bigger and much broader company that has a tremendous ambition to become the leader in medical and scientific delivery of pharmacovigilance services, and really with a digital-first approach.
Welcome to AI for Pharma Growth, the podcast from pioneering pharma artificial intelligence entrepreneur, Dr. Andre Bates. This show aims to demystify AI for all those in biopharma, from startup biotech right through to big pharma. Each episode focuses on all things AI and future tech related to help pharma execs to navigate through the and benefit from the sometimes confusing but magical world of AI-powered tools to grow and get real-world results.
Today's episode is how to use AI and technology to apply good decision-making to medicines. There's a real shift in pharma to capturing real-world data in terms of how medicines are used and patient outcomes. My guest today is Dr. Andrew Rutt, who is the co-founder and CEO of My Meds and Me, which is a company that specializes in using technology to automate the monitoring and reporting for pharmacovigilance. Welcome, Dr. Rutt. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Andre. It's always a pleasure to be with you, and looking forward to the session.
Thank you. Can you tell me a little bit about your background and experience and how you came to found My Meds and Me?
Sure. So I trained, as a physician way back in the day in London. And you know, I trained in actually endocrinology, diabetes, and then did some research in genetics. And I gradually became very interested in the scientific aspects of how you combine medicine, technology, and the whole scientific arena. So I joined at the time, GlaxoSmithKline, and took a career really spanning R&D, medical affairs, drug safety, leading the drug safety organization in the end, and being the EU QPPV. So it really came to me, you know, we working with colleagues there, it was obvious that technology and science could be combined in a much more proactive way and perhaps a much more dynamic way than was possible within the pharma industry. And it's not in any way speaking badly of GSK, who I respect enormously, and they are a client of ours and a very good client of ours. But it was how we could leverage the capabilities outside in really the exploding technology sector and combine that with the deep expertise that we held in the pharmaceutical industry and in medicine. And therefore, we built out My Meds and Me and Reportium as a way of, initially, strangely, was around patient engagement. It was the whole, how can we leverage the best possible data by engaging patients in a much more user-friendly experience than had been there in the past. And I think, as we evolved, actually the experiences became not only at the patient level, but also at the experts that pharma employ themselves, in terms of their own staff or vendors. By that, I mean nursing staff, contract research organizations, patient support program organizations, post-approval study organizations that would be able to use our technology in perhaps a more professional way than the patient. And I think that's been a learning for me, certainly, is starting out with the patient, which is where my medical training started out with, and then moving to other professionals who could also use the technology. And the great thing about what we found was build technology that is, the user interface may be different, but the engine is the same, and how the user experiences it will be different. But underneath the hood, the software operates in a very similar way. So I think that's been the journey. And most recently, as you probably are aware, we were very lucky to be acquired by Stanley Capital which is a private equity organization, and we're combined to form a new entity called Kinexa Solutions, and therefore, we're a much bigger and much broader company that has a tremendous ambition to become the leader in medical and scientific delivery of pharmacovigilance services, and really with a digital first approach. Mm-hmm. So we're now building out the capabilities, not only including human services, but also the whole area of signal management. And as we're going to go through this, the whole area of using artificial intelligence, machine learning, and automation at the core of all our business.
Mm-hmm. And so at the very core, what are patients looking for?
So let's start with, so if I'm a patient, I want more medicines, and I want better medicines, and I want them faster now. And I think at the heart of it is I want medical care that works. And obviously medicines, because of where we are here, I think medicines are at the core of that. Mm-hmm. And how we deliver that, I think, is, the core is how do we deliver medicines to our patients that they are confident that the benefit risk profile is favorable for them personally. That's mm-hmm. that's my goal. And how do we acquire the data in the journey from the R&D processes of pre-approval through the post-approval phase, and then obviously in the broader life cycle management?
Yeah. And of course, some of the challenges are that, life-saving treatments take a long time to firstly develop, but then also go through clinical trials and get approval because we want them safe for patients.
Exactly. So, back in the day when, my training was during the perhaps one of the first crises in healthcare in the Western world, which was the HIV situation, and patients quite rightly and patient communities quite rightly demanded much more rapid access to life-saving therapies, because people were seeing their friends and colleagues and loved ones dying, and I've witnessed that personally when we were first facing the HIV waves in London. Mm. And the FDA very nobly developed the accelerated approval programs really for HIV, and used RNA levels or viral HIV RNA levels as a surrogate, as a biomarker for actually therapeutic efficacy, and that obviously has now been validated, but at the time it was a surrogate endpoint, and that enabled the accelerated approval of a wave of HIV medicines. Now we're very fortunate that wave of medicines has evolved to be really a set of chronic therapies. What we're now facing is medicines largely for oncology indications or perhaps rare diseases, where patients have been underserved. Medicines are coming out for that target specific aspects of the particularly the immune pathways, so targeting removing some of the immunological barriers that protect cancer cells, like the PD-1 pathway, which means that patients can get access to those medicines quicker. However, as you probably met, much of the audience is aware, many of the studies that are done are single arm studies. They're often done maybe 100 patients, if we're lucky, will be in those studies, and patients will be often comprising a very severe, often at the end stage of their diseases. So a very select group. And that enables the accelerated approval to go on using various surrogate markers of particularly of tumor shrinkage during the program, but that data is therefore very limited once we get past that accelerated approval. And I think that's one of the challenges that we face now in terms of how do we get that data, as you say, leveraging intelligent automation, leveraging how we can work with patients and the community after authorization to maximize the chances of having a favorable product.
Yeah. And so how did pharma collect that data in the past, like in the old days?
During clinical trials, things are still fairly traditional. There's electronic data capture is coming through, eCOA platforms are being used. In the post-approval phase, there is unfortunately still, I would call them legacy documents, and by that I mean there's still a tendency to use legacy systems, and that's not across all of pharma, but I'm saying a large proportion of pharma still uses legacy systems. And I liken it to, it's a bit like the Kodak moment, where we're all using 35 millimeter film and converting it to digital files, and that obviously can be done, and that we do that, so we can convert files such as documents into digital files. But a more appropriate way of doing that is, why not just go digital first, like you would with your mobile phone? You wouldn't dream of, I mean, most of us still have a 35 millimeter camera hanging around somewhere, but 99.99% of the time we go digital first and take a photograph with our the phone on our camera, on with our camera phone.
And so how do you at My Meds and Me solve this problem? What's your solution?
Well, so the way we've done that is to go digital first for the vast majority of our offerings. I think our goal is always, say, why convert from an analog file, a legacy system, when you can go digital first with the patient, the actor that's working with the patient, the nurse, the support program staff, the clinical teams, the sales reps, the call centers, all use our platform. And therefore you have, our best customers basically say, why do anything else when you can standardize the intake through a digital first approach across the entire landscape of adverse event intake across their organization? Now, I think that's, to be honest, that's an impossibility for most companies, because documents come in, or data comes in, from a variety of sources where it may be difficult, if not impossible, to digitize. So we may say, actually, what we're offering now is saying, well, we can help you transition to digital first by ingesting and structuring those legacy documents, the standard PV forms, the array of forms in different languages, can all be ingested. And through intelligent automation, we can manage that data and workflow that data neatly, and this is what the best part is, into the exact same interface that the company uses, our clients use, for digital first. So for the end user in the quality review process or the medical review process, they're seeing an identical seamless workflow. For them, it's exactly the same, whether it's Reportum digital first or Reportum forms, it's the same interface. And that means that when they decide, well, actually, we can reduce some of our PDFs or some of our MedWatch or some of our CEOMS forms because we're doing digital first, it's all there. There's no change management. It's all done. And that, I think, is the way that automation, that's the best way that automation can be leveraged, is take the customer, take the client on a journey in the steps that they want to take, rather than forcing them down a particular path.
Yeah. And so what data do you capture outside of the traditional forms that they use? Is there any additional data that you capture there?
Well, so I think if we go back to the accelerated approval scenario, you know, what we've seen is, I mean, I like to call it compliance and compliance plus. So for a product that's been on the market for 20 years, let's call it a statin or an antihypertensive, then those drugs have a very stable and accepted safety profile. And I like to portray that as, actually having lots of data means that I know that the baseline's not changing. I know that actually I'm getting data and I can see that things are stable. Life is good. For new products, I think the what we need is new information. And at that point, for new medicines that are in the post-approval phase, that's a sweet spot that we're working on intensively, because that's where medical and scientific knowledge is important and imperative, because we don't know much about those medicines. So we work with our pharma clients closely to design an interface and design and call it an omni-channel approach to gathering the data through digital first or other mechanisms, but we design the experience to be tailored to the medicine or the therapeutic area rather than a generic experience. So we're saying, if you're getting a vaccine or an oncology product, the experience for the users and the patients is utterly different. Completely different. If we have a COVID vaccine experience, we'll say, you know, where was the vaccine given, which part of the body, which center was gave it to, as opposed to an oncology program, we're working closely with specialty pharmacies who are looking after those patients over the long term, and it's a very, very different experience. So our goal is to have a configurable, highly configurable, word is configurable, application that then is tailored to the product and therapeutic area and the user, so that they have the best experience and can capture that data and provide the data that is relevant in the easiest, quickest way possible. Mm-hmm. That's what we do.
Nice.
And now what we're going to do, I mean, just be upfront, mm-hmm. a little taster, you'll see over the next months, what we'll also be incorporating into the platform is an analytics capability. So not only will we be able to get data fast, but channel it into our proprietary analytics engine within the organization that enables us to then surface signals at the earliest opportunity. So great data, workflow, great and channeled to signals at the earliest opportunity. And obviously then you've got the medical experts at the back end who can analyze that data to determine, is the signal something that merits a, you know, further investigation, a label change, something else that, or it's just a random event. And I think that's the way that we will all need to work in future, because that's what at least the COVID situation has taught us: get data fast and get to the analysis of that data very quickly.
So you're rolling that over the next few months. What about how your clients have been using it up to now? And then let's talk about what additions there'll be in the next few months. So could you give me, for example, a case study of how a farm company was doing it in the past, and then once they started using Reportum, what Sure. changed? Yeah.
So I think we've got a few very good examples, and one is with one of our very good clients, who's Gilead, who has a very strong antiviral portfolio and now is moving into a strong oncology portfolio. And many of their medicines require that whole specialist package to support patients during the post-approval phase. And they've worked with us very closely on some of the REMS and risk management programs and patient support programs. And traditionally they worked with their partners, and let's say, you know, partners like UBC or others who traditionally run large-scale support programs and post-approval programs on behalf of pharma clients. And we worked with both, well, particularly with Gilead, who's our direct client, but then to analyze the data, we worked with UBC and Gilead. And I, you know, this is public data, so I'm not sharing something that is not already being talked about more publicly. But we worked very closely with the experts on both sides, with the mm-hmm. the teams who currently still run those programs with us, who are the patient-facing teams, and then the teams at Gilead, who are the teams who receive the data and manage the data. And in the past, it was bits of paper flying around. It was paper going between one, I mean, call it virtual paper, email paper, mm-hmm. and the paper tends to get lost, and the paper then has to be reconciled, and it can't be found, and the data on the bits of paper wasn't correct. It has to be then followed up and checked. So, and, you know, staff obviously turn over and change. So there were a huge number of, I would say, redundant, low-value manual steps and chasing that never really, that both companies didn't like. And what we found after we implemented, some simple metrics, I'm going to just look over, and there was things like 90% reduction in training effort of the support program staff that were working with the patients. Now that's massive. Mm-hmm. If staff either have to increase or turn over, there was a 50%, you know, around about a 50% reduction in downstream case processing effort. There was a complete removal of reconciliation. That means, you know, if I've sent mm-hmm. you a document, did you receive it, and did you receive it correctly? And zero late cases. So, and the feedback from the users, this was probably the most, the thing that pleased me the most, is the actual users said, the feedback from the nursing teams that were working with the patients saying, we really love this because it enables us to have a much richer and much better interaction with the patients that enables them to capture the data that's important, while at the same time focusing on the needs of the patient. Because obviously there are two components to the interaction. One, make sure the patient feels supported and is able to talk through their experiences, but also then at the back end be able to capture the data that ultimately pharma require to enable them to have an accurate view of the safety profile of the medicine. Mm-hmm. So it's been a great journey, and we've replicated that with other clients, I mentioned GSK, but others who are using in earnest the same sort of platform for specialty pharmacies, for patient support programs, post-approval programs, is all part of the mix.
How long does it take? So, for example, I'm just thinking of a particular client that has had mainly primary care drugs, and they're now going heavily into rare disease, which they don't have a lot of experience in. How long would it take for you to set up, for example, one of these programs for a new client?
So one of our top 10 pharma clients set up the system within 4 weeks after signing the contract. So they took this, and we're talking a company that has somewhere between 350 to 400,000 reports annually.
Yeah.
And they leveraged the platform that we have, the documentation that we provide, the software testing that we provide, to enable them to have a very, very rapid deployment of the system and go live. Now, some companies will take longer because they require, let's say they require a greater degree of form configuration than somebody else. They've got a very specific portfolio need and they want to work with us. That might take 2 to 3 months. Mm-hmm. But it's somewhere between the 1 to 3 month mark. And I would say we are never the rate limiting step. The only rate limiting step is the pharma team, for good reason, because they have to make decisions about configuration. They have a larger group of stakeholders. But realistically, we are never the folks who we're never rate limiting.
Yeah. And how is it once it's set up? Is it for them to use? Could you talk us through the process once it's set up?
So many organizations deal with how a user's trained. We really. The system is so intuitive that it requires almost no training at all. The only time we've gone into training is really where we're dealing with a group of power users, and I would say that's call center staff who may have a much richer interface. Then we do a train the trainer, and that's literally we do a couple of training sessions for the trainers within the company. And then they can train the rest of the staff. Or we do a lot, a Zoom or a Teams call for the whole team, and then do a repeat call. But realistically, it's pretty straightforward. And what we found is that people are very familiar very quickly with the application. So I think for the vast majority of users, very straightforward. The only one that we tend to do a more detailed training is for call center staff because of the speed of the interactions there. So it's the calls are coming through. So we want them to be up to speed faster than, say, somebody who's doing the calls doing outreach calls rather than inbound calls.
And do companies tend to use it globally once they sign up with you? Is it just
So that's one of the big attractions for what we do. When I say omnichannel, I know we all think in English. One of our big clients who's just doing a big upgrade is a Japanese company, and one of their key requirements is that the work that we do with them, obviously. Everything has to be in Japanese in terms of the Japanese interface. And we have that's up and running, has been up and running very effectively. But also the way we provide the translations and everything else, they scrutinize how we do that with their experts in Japan to make sure it's not only translated to English, but it's translated correctly into medical English. So I think that's been a good learning. And certainly I was fortunate enough to work in Singapore and work with the very closely with the Asia Pacific teams at GSK, and they are still a very, very close customer of ours working, and they've worked with us very closely over the last year to build out, and I say that carefully, build out and amplify and accentuate the Japan interface specifically to meet the requirements of medical representatives, document attachments, etc. But the great thing about the way we've worked there is the solution that we've built, or the solution, the way we've configured and built out the solution there, it's not only available to them, it's available to everyone else, but it's also available in all other languages. So it's not, just because we build it to be Japan first means that it's available in German, Spanish, and etc. It just means that they were the first user group because they wanted certain capability sets.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. And once you add in the next few months, the automated analytics engine, how will that speed up the analysis?
Well, so it's partly automate. I mean, it's partly data visualization, but it's also enabling world-class signal detection to occur. So the key for signal detection, obviously, is data. Mm-hmm. So without data, it's a bit difficult to detect signals. So the first is to have robust data and lots of it, and then have a data analytics capability that flags those signals from a variety of sources, that aggregates the data in the best possible way and flags it to medical and scientific experts for rapid evaluation. Mm-hmm. So when I was at GSK, certainly I ran large medical evaluation and signal detection teams. And what I would say is today the technology is moved to a different level, and it leverages not only the spontaneous adverse event data that we provide, but also data from other sources, you know, such as the EMA database, the FAERS database, the FDA database. And it's how we combine those data sources into a single feed that enables the drug safety experts then to run meaningful analysis as fast as possible.
Nice. And so a lot of those data sources are already in your system?
So obviously data sources are publicly available. So some of those data sources are publicly available. I think what our plans are is to leverage some of the best in class technologies that are out there and bring them into the family over the, you know, as soon as possible. And I think, you know, I'm confident that by the first quarter next year, when we meet again, we'll have a compelling story that starts at, you know, intake, a harmonized intake engine through us, a workflow through us, a quality and medical review through us, feeding downstream analytics systems that flag signals, where we can then leverage, you know, best in class medical expertise within our organization to understand the benefit risk profile of the medicines, and then, you know, determine what if any actions are needed. And I think that's the end game. You know, it's what, once one has an understanding of the benefit risk profile, what actions are needed as a result of that. And I think, you know, back to the original discussion we were having about artificial intelligence and leveraging AI, you know, my slightly cruel point is that I think it's time for us to put the intelligence back to artificial intelligence. Yeah. How we leverage artificial intelligence, not only in terms of the document intake and how we manage that with patients, but how we interact with patients in a more intelligent way, leveraging automation tools so that they can respond to dynamic manner to dynamic questioning. But at the back end, how we leverage automation, intelligent automation, to flag issues and signals that are most likely real, that we can act upon in an expedited format, which goes back to my accelerated approvals, is, you know, we need to be able to enable the accelerated approval process to then feed a post-approval process that is again fed by data and good data, so that we can analyze that data to determine whether the true profile of those drugs is favorable or not. And I think that's what our game will be in my organization in our future, you know, in the future of the company that I'm part of now.
Yeah. And so it really is saving those teams internally in pharma so much time and so much money just doing this alone.
That's right. And I my belief is that, you know, if you're a company that so firstly, how do you save the money? I think the first is enable the money to be spent where its return on investment is the best. So launching a new medicine is very expensive. Lots of new medicines, particularly in the oncology space, even the COVID space, were expensive in terms of the development programs that were required. So a company doesn't want to spend, I mean, if I were part of a pharma company, I would want to minimize the amount of money I'm spending on fairly basic processing efforts But where I would want to spend it on is saying, how do I get the best possible data to ensure that I know everything possible about this new medicine, that I can care for this medicine and shepherd it to be very successful, while understanding truly, does it work? In whom does it work? If it has risks, in whom are those risks? How do I best manage those risks through accurate labeling and patient information? That's what new medicine development is all about. And that's where packaging technology is really key, because the intelligence there is, how do I ensure that I understand that medicine at the earliest opportunity, while almost it's flattening the curve. I don't want to spend increasing amounts of money on activities which actually should be automated through the best form of automation. I'm all about you know machine and man working in, or machine and person working in harmony, so that we get the best outcome for our clients and ultimately for patients.
Machine augmenting.
That's right. I mean, I'm all about augmentation. It's how do I make the human better through providing optimal automation, rather than, it's not necessarily always about replacing the human, it's about augmenting human activities and taking out human activities that frankly humans do poorly, which is repetitive, repetitive activities that are error prone. And frankly, you asked me about use cases. One of the things that our clients look at is, well, guess what? By going digital first and digitizing the process, errors are removed. And the cost of a cost of a regulatory inspection going badly to a client can run into millions, if not tens of millions of dollars, because of the number of people involved. Take that away, that's a massive benefit.
Exactly. Wow. So thank you so much for talking about this. For anyone listening who wants to find out more, if you go to mymedsandme.com, you will see more, and you can reach out to Andrew and his team there. Thank you so much for being on the show today, and I look forward to hearing more in Q1 next year.
Thank you very much, Dr. Bates.
Thanks for listening to this episode of AI for Pharma Growth. If you have received huge value from this show, or maybe this episode has highlighted how you can use AI in your company, then we would love for you to support the show by leaving us a 5-star rating. Please make sure you hit the subscribe or follow button on your podcast app now to make sure you never miss an episode.